Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today is Thursday, December 14th, 2023, and we really appreciate your viewership, not only at the Eastman Financial Report, but also on WVW-TV as well. As you know, we're in the middle of December, and of course, this is the peak of gift-giving season. And we're all thinking about not only year-end excitement, but also giving gifts and giving thanks for the blessings of the year. And I'd like to remind you as viewers of WVW-TV that we are not a commercial broadcasting network. We don't sell commercial advertising, and we live and thrive off of the sponsors that kindly and generously donate to keep our message alive and on the air 24/7 so that you can watch us live or you can watch us recorded messages 24 hours a day without having to subscribe or pay for a paywall or do any type of financial commitment at all. We bring our information free to the great marketplace of ideas. The way we do that, of course, is through donations and sponsorships. And if you're interested at this generous giving time of the year to help continue the efforts and ministry of WVW-TV, we'd really appreciate it if you went to the WVWFoundation.com website and make a donation to help keep the costs in line, keep us on the air. It's not cheap to run a television network. And of course, WVW-TV has been around since 2006. It's done a remarkable job of bringing very, very valid and important viewpoints to the great marketplace of ideas. And it can only do that through continuing support from viewers and sponsors. So if you're in a gift-giving mood and you appreciate what we do here on this network, this would be a great time to go to the WVW Foundation and make a donation, because it would really help out. We also like to thank our corporate sponsors, people, companies that step up in the major way to keep our broadcasts flowing freely. And the sponsor for my show this year has been Swiss America Trading, which is a company. It's an American company based in Arizona, and they sell precious metals. So if you are thinking about adding to your collection of precious metals like gold or silver or platinum, and you're looking for a vendor or a partner, you can certainly give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them for some free information, or you can go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they have some specials, and you might want to take a look at that in these late hours of gift giving. If you're scrambling around trying to figure out what to get Uncle Mortimer for Christmas or a gift, you might want to take a look at the products they have to offer. They just popped up on the screen here. And as you can see, a very traditional way and safe way to buy precious metals is through these coins that are minted. These happen to be minted by the U.S. Mint, so you know that the quality and the quantity are guaranteed by the federal government. And if you're interested in a 1 ounce coin and you buy a American bullion coin like you see on the screen, there's 1 ounce at a very high purity, and that's guaranteed by the U.S. Mint. If you look at the coin in the middle, that's the silver coin. That's a standing Liberty. And there's a half dollar size of pure silver. And Swiss America is still offering those on sale at $13.50. Plus, it includes free shipping. So this very late hour, if you're thinking about what to get all of your unbought for friends and relatives, a gift of precious metals might be kind of a cool idea, because it sends a signal. It says that, you know, I'm giving you something precious that's going to last a very, very long time. And it retains its buying power and its value because, of course, it's precious metal. And it's a very symbolic gift to give somebody, that you're giving them something that will last for a very, very, very long time. Until the end, the second coming, it's going to last forever. Gold and silver doesn't go away. And so it's a gift that they would use and or at least keep, and not just use up and throw away and it ends up in a landfill somewhere. This is a precious metal gift, and it might be kind of a cool idea to think about that. So for $13.50 each, which includes free shipping, this would be a great time to get on their website and take a look at that deal, because it won't, obviously, the holidays are next weekend already, but if you take advantage of this special, that only lasts until the inventory runs out, and then it's over, that'll be done. And then, of course, there's a cap of $250 per person, so you might want to look at that. Anyway, give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, go to the website, SwissAmerica.com, shop around, see what they have, use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, and see if you can do some last-minute shopping from your easy chair. You won't even have to race over to the mall. You'll be able to buy the wonderful gifts, precious gifts for your loved ones, and you can do it from the comfort of your own home. So give Swiss America a call, and Swiss America, thank you so much for your continuing support of WVW-TV and the work we do here. You are truly a blessing to have, and we appreciate very much the efforts that you make to keep us online. Okay, let's jump into the news, and what a news day. Now, if you were tuned in yesterday, and I hope you were, you will have heard me talk about the pending Federal Open Market Committee meeting of the Federal Reserve that was happening while I was speaking. And of course, I was wondering what the outcome would be. And shortly after I finished my program, of course, the outcome emerged. The smoke came up the chimney and the Federal Reserve spoke. And it has caused a very large blowback in the financial news. I mean, this is one of these things I was talking about yesterday, where the Federal Reserve is supposed to be an independent body of bankers. And the government is supposed to be this little public service thing that the people set up to do the common good, the tax and spend. Okay, we're going to have a tax, which nobody likes, and then we're going to spend it on a bridge or a road or a military or a post office or whatever. And the idea was that we, the people, would set up a government that would tax us and then spend it for our public good. So even if you don't like paying taxes, which you have to pay your taxes, of course, but if you don't like it, you at least have the benefit of driving on a nice road or over a new bridge so you don't have to swim across the river. There's some public good or public benefit, and taxpayers are, of course, a member of the public. So the whole idea was the government is going to be this little thing, and we're going to have a free economy and a free market and a free world and freedom. And we use this government to basically provide services that the free market would not provide. You wouldn't build a bridge if you couldn't get revenues if you were in the private sector. I suppose there are toll bridges, you know. But at the end of the day, government is instituted to serve the people. And that was the original idea, you see. Well, we migrate to today and we look at what happened yesterday with the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. And of course, we know that that is the seven governors of the Federal Reserve Board of Directors, all of whom are appointed by the presidents, various presidents, because they have a 15-year term and they're confirmed by the Senate. And then there's the president of the all-important New York Federal Reserve Bank. And then there's the other 11 Federal Reserve banks around the country. And then there's a rotation for the other, five other presidents who sit from time to time on the Federal Open Market Committee. And this is the major policy committee of the Federal Reserve. And the idea, of course, is that the Federal Reserve System is not a government agency. Now, people think, well, Federal Reserve must be federal, right? It's not. It's really an organization that is quasi, very much quasi. And it was a big debate when they set this thing up back in 1913. And the compromise was that the Board of Governors would be appointed by the President of the United States, but they would serve 15-year terms. And of course, our Constitution says that our presidents can only serve 8 years if they get reelected. So the point is that this thing was supposed to have a life outside of government. And then there are all these Federal Reserve branch presidents. And if you look at the structure of the Federal Reserve itself, local banks are member owners of the regional Federal Reserve. And that's the way it was set up. So there's an argument to be made that the Federal Reserve is owned by the banks and the banks are owned by the rich guys and all this conspiracy stuff. But at the end of the day, the Federal Reserve System and the banking system is not a branch of the federal government. It is supposed to be independent, and it has acted independently since 1913 with some very notable exceptions. And I think that's where we are today. And this sort of hails back, if you look back into time, the ancient history of the Vietnam War era and President Johnson, who basically went off on Fed Chair Martin at the time. And Mr. Martin wanted to raise the interest rates to calm down the economy, and President Johnson wanted guns and butter. That was the great Vietnam War and Great Society. We're going to fund the Vietnam War, we're going to fund Great Society, and for a guy from Texas who was about as conservative as could be, who was really not all that nice of a guy. He it was a major clash because by raising interest rates, you slowed down the economy, and that would make it more difficult to fund the Vietnam War, which was never a popular war, and fund the Great Society, where a vast majority of Americans thought it was a handout. You know, it was a wealth transfer from some Americans to other Americans, and that was really not politically cool. Well, there's always been this argument that the Federal Reserve, the president can't run the country if the Federal Reserve doesn't cooperate with the monetary policy, and the Federal Reserve is saying, hey, we're independent. We're the banking industry. My job is to shovel money in the back door of a bank that's failing, so the tellers can shovel money out the front door and stop the Jimmy Stewart and Mary Poppins bank runs. And that was the whole purpose of this, is to have a stabilizing factor. And of course, Congress comes along and creates the Federal Reserve and says, you get two mandates. So number one, make sure people are employed, full employment. And that's defined statistically as like 3% unemployment. And the second thing is keep inflation under control so the whole thing doesn't just spin out of control, because they knew that if you just keep pumping money into the banking system and the economy would, you know, would blow, would expand rather rapidly, like a balloon. You keep blowing until it blows up. So that's really where the Federal Reserve is. And the issue has always been the federal government needs a robust federal, excuse me, the federal government needs a robust national economy to be reelected, and to have lots of tax dollars come in so they can spend money on all sorts of wonderful utopian ideas. And there's always this pressure between the Federal Reserve independence and the administration's need for a growing economy. There has never been an elected president who runs and campaigns on the platform, I'm going to be elected and kill the economy. I mean, flatten it out. Everybody's going to be unemployed. You all lose your houses. It'll be great. Vote for me. That doesn't happen. Nobody does that. Okay. They all run on, if you elect me, life will be better. You'll have chicken in every pot. You'll have more money in your bank account. You'll be driving a bigger car, living in a bigger house. You'll be happier, happier, happier if you vote for me rather than the other guy. This is the political world we live in. And sadly, what we saw yesterday opens up that closet of the monster in the closet, the goblin in the closet, because what has happened is that the Federal Reserve Chair, Mr. Powell, has effectively contradicted himself from 2 weeks ago, and the media is calling it a pivot. He has pivoted 180 degrees, because 2 weeks ago he was saying that we are going to hold interest rates flat, steady, and they're between 5 and 5.25 right now. This is that interbank rate that banks charge each other to make sure they stay in compliance. Well, he was saying we're holding the interest rates flat or steady. We might raise them because all these numbers keep coming in. Remember yesterday I was talking at length about the consumer price index numbers and how that thing came in. And there's the headline number, which was up a tenth of a percent, which could be a rounding error. And then there's the core number, and that was up. And that's the one they kind of worry about, because that's headline minus food and energy. And then there was minus housing, and that was up even worse. And then we looked at inflation and housing at 6.7%. So the numbers are saying inflation is going up. And if you look at the numbers from the employment world, the numbers are showing that America's at a kind of a full employment-y kind of place. As a matter of fact, today's numbers came out, and I have them here. This was the jobless claims. Remember, our unemployment claims come out on Thursday? Well, today's unemployment Thursday. And of course, the people applying for unemployment went down last week to 202,000 people. That's down from, I think it was 216,000 and 208,000. Now it's 202. So what it shows us is a declining trend in people applying for unemployment. Now that's good. We don't want anybody applying for unemployment. In a perfect world, nobody. As a matter of fact, under the dual mandate, the Federal Reserve, there shouldn't be unemployed people, but there always are. We hear, you know, layoffs from big companies in the media all the time. But at the end of the day, the unemployment numbers are going down. These are first-time claims. So somebody loses their job and they're like, oh my gosh, I got to pay the rent, I got to pay my mortgage, my car payments, my groceries. You run over to the state unemployment office, you fill out the forms, and they send you $38 or some small nominal amount. And effectively, it's an indicator of, it's a very real-time indicator of people losing their jobs, you know, week by week. Now, of course, you get laid off and then you think, well, I'll find a new job, and you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months weeks later you figure out you can't, then you apply for unemployment. There's always a lag, but the new claims is an important number. And of course, I remember back in 2008 when I was teaching economics full time, and you know, those numbers were in the 380,000 to 400,000 a week. It was bloody. These numbers are not bad. 202,000 new claims, 330 million Americans. That's not a panicky kind of number. So what it tells you is the economy is doing pretty well, at least with respect to employment. We did notice that the continuing claims, people who filed and stayed because they can't find work, is inching up, which is never a good sign, but it's still below 1.9 million people. So even that is not a number on fire. So what it's telling you is inflation is bubbling along just fine. People are still working. But when you take these consumer samples, like the consumer sentiment surveys and other surveys, what you're seeing is that the people's perception of the economy stinks. It's just they're frightened. The interest rates are too high. Inflation is still too high. You go to the grocery store. Now, gasoline's been coming down because I've been digging into the number. Why am I seeing gas at $2.68, which is great in the Milwaukee area? That's perfect. But what it tells you is the demand, the aggregate demand for petroleum worldwide is declining. And that's why there is an overproduction situation. Supply is bigger than demand. And of course, then the price goes down, the quantity goes up. So what we're seeing is an economy that is very troubled. And that's not a good place to be going into an election. I talked about this yesterday. If you're an incumbent, the last thing in the world you want is a reception in the middle of an election. That's not a good recipe for getting back into your office. So what happened yesterday, I know this is a bit of a digression, but it's important, is that 2 weeks ago, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee was signaling that we're going to keep interest rates steady, flat, but we may be going up because inflation numbers are troubling. Okay, and we may not be done raising interest rates. Now, we've also talked about this bifurcation or separation of the Fed's open market tweaking of the interest rates has been to some extent decoupled from the reality of the debt market. The debt market isn't buying 5.25 or 5.5. The free market, the global market, is setting its own rates because you got Moody's and Fitch and Standard and Poor's are all kind of downgrading the United States credit score. Like when your credit score goes down, then your interest rates go up. Well, same thing with the federal government. So what you're starting to see is there's a lot of political pressure. And of course, the allegations in the news all over every story I'm reading is that the Fed pivots, and now they're saying we're going to hold interest rates steady, just like I said yesterday, they're going to do a thing, but we may be starting to lower the rates in 2024 because of all the good news we're seeing, and we might raise them again in 2025. Well, that is about as transparent, politically transparent as you can be. We're in a situation where the Fed's dual mandate is full employment and keep inflation in check. Well, when we look at the employment numbers, 202,000 unemployment claims, that's not a lot of unemployment. That's half what we saw in the last meltdown in 2008. So they've achieved their full employment. There's always some statistical unemployment as people are between jobs or maybe maternity leave or parental leave or some, or maybe you take leave for an illness, you maybe take a couple of months off, you're unemployed. But the reality is we're looking at an American full employment situation. And we got like 10 million people sneaking in. And you have to ask yourself the question, I mean, how do these basically, you shouldn't be working if you don't have a proper documentation. But apparently the United States economy is humming along with respect to unemployed. We're not seeing deep unemployment numbers where, state budgets are being crushed by paying unemployment benefits. So that part of the dual mandate is secure. The other part of the mandate is keep inflation in check. And in March, they're telling us inflation at 2%, that's the bogey. That's where we want to be. And of course, what do they do? Well, we had inflation of 9% last year. So they jacked up the interest rates from like 1.5% to 5.5%, whatever. Mortgage rates are now 8%, 7%. They have crushed the housing market to stop inflation. And now, yesterday, the Fed chair pivots and says, we're going to start lowering interest rates. Well, what does lowering interest rates do to the economy, students? This is a quick, you know, pop-up quiz here. Let me ask you that question. Isn't that pushing the punch bowl back toward the edge of the table so people can have more punch and the party livens up and the economy takes off? Of course, when you reduce the interest rates, then people will say, you know what, it might be worth it to buy, you know, borrow money to buy something or to build something or to make something. It stimulates the economy. Well, if your inflation rate, and we've heard, you know, this was yesterday, we had core numbers on Tuesday, which I reported yesterday. If that's telling you that core inflation is still humming along at 4% and housing inflation is 6.7%, and you lower the interest rates, that is like pushing the punch bowl into the middle of the party and spiking it up a little more. It will accelerate. So from our perspective, you know, we the people's perspective, And we asked the question, was there political leverage on the Federal Reserve? And of course, the Federal Reserve chair will say, of course not. We're an independent agency. You know, we're above politics. Whatever. The point is, when they go to stimulate the economy in 2024, you are going to have to be in a position where you're going to have to be able to take care of yourself. And what this tells you is, and if you look historically at the data, when they start to lower the interest rates, then the economy picks up. And there are always winners and losers. But when inflation starts to pick up, and you'll see this in the consumer price index numbers, which are generated by the administration. So the question is, if they cut the interest rates to stimulate, will they suppress the inflation numbers? Because they're always revised down later. You have to be cognizant of what's going on. And that's why it's important when you hear these news stories to begin to understand what exactly is happening. The critical thinking skills necessary to interpret financial news is important. You cannot let this story hit you and you say, oh boy, the Feds are going to cut rates. Now the, you know, all mortgages will be cheaper next year. Yes, they will. But the blowback on housing prices, if you think housing prices are expensive now, there is such a built-up aggregate demand in the pipeline trying to buy houses. As people start to list their homes because they can buy homes for lower mortgage prices, that's going to create a very big stimulus in the housing market, because supply of housing available for purchase will begin to just explode. And of course, when the supply exceeds demand, what happens? Well, the price comes down. But when supply meets demand, prices are continuing to go up, and that will drive the national inflation numbers. So the long story is, you will want to be in a position where you are able to at least protect your buying power. If not, I suppose you could capitalize on it if you were a clever trader. This is, you know, that's what we saw in the markets yesterday. You looked at the markets as soon as Powell made these statements. You know, all of the, anything that had to do with asset protection or inflation protection was driven up, because what people realize is, if you're going to stimulate the economy, we're already at 4% inflation. This is the 1970s, and it's going to be robust. So if you have lots of property, lots of gold and silver and antiques and whatever, collector artwork or collector cars or whatever floats your boat, as long as it's a tangible asset, as inflation builds itself into society, the price of all that stuff goes up. But if you own nothing and are happy, like some millennials and Generation Z people, and you own nothing and you're happy because, you know, the coffee shop downstairs of your apartment building is all you need, well, you better be prepared to be tippling at, you know, 15 bucks a cup, because that's what happens. You can see that in history when you look from the 1970s, and I'm not talking about ancient history, although I could, but the reality is, if you look at modern history from the 70s forward, and that is a very critical time, because the 70s was the monetary crisis era, driven by energy prices. And then in the 1980s, the digital thing happened. And we are now firmly in the digital world. So when you look at an energy-driven market like the 70s, and you look at an energy-driven world today, then you're going to see parallels that are quite consistent. And that's why I think there's so much media blowback pointing fingers at the Fed. Say, the administration leaned on you and you did 180. Well, We'll see. We'll see. You'd like to think that the banking system is not necessarily controlled by the federal government. You'd like to think that the federal government was the servant of the people rather than the master of the people. And I think this is becoming a huge thing in American culture today, is that the federal government is becoming omnipotent with respect to controlling society, primarily because of the advancements in technology. I mean, if you think about how we communicate and like right now, you're watching me on a computer screen, and all of this stuff is in a networked environment, that it becomes very, very dangerous to freedom and society when you have a banking system and the monetary system that is controlled by a federal government. The original idea was that the people and the economy would exist, and there'd be a banking function within there, like there has been since the beginning of humans, okay? And the banking system is effectively the liquidity that makes the big ball work, and that's what drives the economy. And the government's supposed to be, like I say, tax and spend to help, take some money out of the ball and you put it into public goods, make life better for everyone. Then John Maynard Keynes comes along and says, the Keynesian multiplier, you can tax and spend and borrow and spend and grow it bigger. Well, here we are. The economy's struggling along, 33, 34, $35 trillion in debt. Who knows? Who knows what the debt's going to be by the end of the year? We got, what, 2.5 weeks left? We'll find out. But at the end of the day, this has to be brought back into balance. And sadly, when you talk to a lot of the elected officials about economic concepts, they're not really quite understanding the role each plays in a free society. They tend to think of the government as the universe within which everything happens. Banking happens here, commerce happens here, and it's all within a government envelope. Of course, if you live in, China, that's kind of the way it is. Soviet Union tried that. That didn't work real well, but it took 70 years and 100 million plus dead people. So at the end of the day, we want to be thinking with our critical thinking skills, not to take the bait when you see stories like this. It was interesting. I was having a discussion with a friend yesterday, as a matter of fact, talking about illusions. And he's sort of doing some research on the great magicians and illusionists in history, like Harry Houdini and other great entertainers who learned how to do sleight of hand and illusions and then perform the illusions for the entertainment of the audience. And the audience would applaud, and they like to go, and this would be a thing. You'd go and watch the magician and do the tricks, and then you'd be dazzled, and you'd pay it, buy the ticket, then you'd leave. And of course, in your mind, you knew that was a magician, and it's all tricks, because you really can't saw the beautiful lady in half, because that would be illegal, and it wouldn't be too good for the beautiful lady. And at the end of the day, somehow she gets put back together and walks off the stage waving, and everybody claps. And oh boy, what a great show that was! It's all sleight of hand and illusion. But this guy's research, and it's fascinating, goes back to the very beginnings of time, and he talks about magic and like the word magi, and the three wise men, magi, and magicians. And the illusions, and how even with respect to when Moses was negotiating with the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go, how Moses would perform a miracle, and then the Pharaoh would have his magicians come in and they'd replicate it. And time after time, first it was the stick that turned into the snake, and then it was the bloody river, and then the frogs, and then the locusts. And all of these illusions could be replicated because you could create the illusion. And of course, you're trying to influence the Pharaoh, of course. And finally, when God comes along, he's had enough of this, and he brings the Passover, and that's when the Pharaoh gave up. He said, you know what, we're not doing this a second time. But if you look through history, the ability to create sleight of hand and illusion is a very powerful thing. And of course, in modern society, we look at magicians as entertainers. But when you think about how this concept of creating an illusion comes along, you have to be very careful in Wall Street not to see the illusion, because Wall Street's the one place where all the money trades, bonds, stocks, equities, all this stuff. And that's the one place where you can really, really get taken in with illusions. That's why greed and fear drive the markets. Well, you want to be careful when you see a story. Be sure that's not a magician, that they're not, sawing the beautiful lady in half. You have to understand it's a trick. Okay, that's the point. And when I think when we see blowback in the media from, you know, somebody as important as the Federal Reserve Chair, that this is, you know, reason to take pause and raise an eyebrow and say, just what exactly happened? Well, I'll talk about more about the Fed reaction tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you so much for supporting WVW-TV and Swiss America. So thank you very much. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.